If you're exhausted from doing it all yourself, this one's definitely for you. Hi, and welcome to The Debrief Show. I'm your host, Dee Clayton. I'm an executive coach, NLP trainer, and passionate about all things communication. We're going to cover why most leaders think that delegation is about offloading tasks, but it's not. And you'll hear about techniques that you can use right away.
If you're starting to feel that you're not, you know, not really enjoying your role the way you thought you would, that's probably the it's how you feel about your work, isn't it? Responsibility is key here. It may not be that you feel responsible for the other teams. It might be something else that your role now gives you responsibility for, which actually is the drain that makes you feel, you know, less energized around your work.
Mark is the founder of the Reluctant Leader Academy, host of the Reluctant Leader podcast, and author of the book Motivated. Hi, Mark. So tell us, what is a reluctant leader?
Well, I think from my own experience, it's getting into a position of managing people and being responsible for people and not being really prepared for it and not particularly wanting to do it either. Not really having the will to do it.
We come across a lot of this, I'm sure you do in your work, where people are maybe been leaders for years, right? But they still, they would maybe, if they got down to it, say that they're reluctant. How does that look on somebody? How would I spot the signs if I was a reluctant leader or if I had some of those in my team? What would that look like?
I suppose the first thing to think about is, how did you end up being a leader? And that's when, you know, what is a leader? Well, a leader is someone that has responsibility for others. That's how I see it. And obviously, you're leading them somewhere. And so think about how you got there. Was it something that you planned? Was it something that you prepared yourself for? And first of all, start there. And if you're starting to feel that you're not, you know, not really enjoying your role the way you thought you would, that's probably it's how you feel about your work, isn't it? You know, I can remember back in the day when I was running my retail business, there was, you know, before I had all the responsibility, you know, I came in with a bit more of a bounce in my step because there was things that I was doing that just give me things that I didn't really realize at the time. It's only when you suddenly get the responsibility of others, and that means you've got less time to do those things, you spend all your time managing people. That's where I see the problem becomes, because when you're dropping things that you previously enjoyed doing to do something that perhaps you don't enjoy so much, then the energy levels start to drop. And I think the key here is understanding how you control your energy and how you come to work with as much energy as you can to do your job well. And if you're feeling you haven't got that energy, then maybe it's time to reconnect with the things that do give you energy.
Yeah, so you're not saying that managing people doesn't give you energy. It's just that for you, that was your thing that sort of drained you. But for someone else, they might like managing the people, but they might not like the responsibility of reporting the numbers back up the chain, or the presentations that they have to do when they're more senior. It could be all sorts of different things that they don't like about being a leader. Now they've kind of moved up the chain, couldn't it? You're not saying it's one thing or another, but whatever it is you're saying, to identify what's draining you. Is that right?
I think, yeah, absolutely. I think spot on. Using the word responsibility is key here. It may not be that you feel responsible for the other teams. It might be something else that your role now gives you responsibility for, which actually is the drain that makes you feel, you know, less energized around your work. And that's if we think about the concept of how we turn up at work and get to being more productive. A lot of people, when they say, well, being more productive, they start to think about how they manage their time. But I like the concept of actually managing energy as opposed to managing time. And if you can manage your energy, you're naturally going to be more productive because you've got the energy to do it. Whereas if you start with just the managing time bit, you might run out of energy. And you can always generate energy if you know where you get it from.
That's really interesting concept, because also it takes me more time to do the things that I don't have any energy for. taking you hours and hours and hours, and somebody else who's good at it could do it in a couple of minutes probably, or we could do it together in less time, for example. So yes, that's an interesting idea about managing your energy rather than just your time, or rather than your time. So some of the things that if I had a reluctant leader in my team, for example, let's say I'm super motivated, but I have a reluctant leader in my team, what would that look like then? Would they just be taking too long to do tasks, talking about time?
Well, I think they would, you know, continuing the theme of energy, they're probably not showing up with a lot of energy. They're not like enthusiastic around what they're doing. So there's something lacking. And I think the easiest thing to identify is performance, isn't it? So if they're not performing well, there tends to be a most managers, if you're managing someone, will tend to go down the skills and the training route. Say that, so if they're not performing well, let's give them more skills and let's train them to do better things. Mm. Whereas if we think about what they actually come to work for, so more about the will and the energy they want from their work, that's a concept which most people don't even think about. And if you do, then you say, well, if you get those both things, both elements right, so you've got the skills and the will, that's when you're going to perform. And I don't think you can perform well with just one. And you can be highly motivated, let's say, and lack the skills, or vice versa. But when you really are going to perform well is when you've got both elements. You've got the skills and the will to deliver.
Yeah, you've made me think about high-performing teams. So I think you can probably muddle along okay with a little bit of each of those. But when you're looking to do something different or to achieve something more as an individual or as a team, to be a high-performing team, and certainly with AI and all of the changes that are coming, there's so much pressure on people. I don't think you can just muddle along anymore. People will have to do things really differently and have to really look at new ways to do things and new ways to work together with different types of people and with technology as a partner as well. So that sort of direction that we're going in, I think people are going to have to really be highly skilled and highly willed, if you like. And if it's a question between the two, they're not going to, it's the way I teach a lot of my training is that they need to think about their mindset first. Then they can, I think most people can learn the skill sets if you want to. You can, and there's so many resources now, aren't there? So, you know, my preference is always about will or mindset first. I don't know if you have a preference or think of it either way.
I'd seem to go more towards the will and the motivation, because that's my experience of losing motivation for my business when I was running a retail business. I lost my motivation, particularly to the latter years, because I just was completely disconnected from the things I really wanted from my work.
Yeah.
So definitely I err on that side. And it's something that a lot of people don't think about. So, you know, you've got to try and differentiate yourself a little bit when you're doing the work that we do. You've got to sort of be a little bit different.
Yeah, so it's a niche, isn't it? I suppose it's a niche that is underserved because there's lots of people working in the skills area. So here's skills training on this, skills training on that. And so you found a niche and you've gone, well, actually, that will area is a little bit light. So we were talking earlier, before the show, we were talking about great delegation and you had some insights on that. So let's assume I'm a reluctant leader. I've got 20 people that are working for me. And one of the things that really stresses me out is all of those people and all of my responsibility looking after those people. What advice do you have about delegation or thoughts do you have around that?
So if you are in charge of a team, whether you see yourself as a manager or a leader, you have to be adaptable in the way that you lead. And you've got to be able to be directive. You've got to be able to coach and mentor, but you also got to be able to delegate. And so what I know from the work I've done is most people are not very good at delegating. And the reason why I say that is, when they say that I am a good delegator, I tend to drill down into how they delegate. And what comes out of that conversation is that they're good at delegating tasks, but they're not very good at delegating responsibility. And that's the key. If you are a reluctant leader and one of the things that you don't really want to come to work for is being responsible for others, then being good at delegating is a skill to develop, and being able to delegate that responsibility that, so you don't feel as if you're the one that's making all the decisions. That's the thing. So I developed this. If someone came to me in my retail business, I started doing this out of, out of a little bit of frustration. When they come to me with a problem, I wasn't that person that would fix the problem. I would be the person who said, well, what do you think we should do? Or I might say, what would you do if I wasn't here?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they would probably do that. They'd say what they were going to do, and it would be the thing that I would have told them to do anyway. So once you start doing that, then what you notice is that they come to you with that already, they've already formulated that answer. So they'll say, well, we've got this problem. I was thinking about doing this. Mm-hmm. Is that okay? Most times, yes, do that. But then the next step is to say, look, you don't need to come to me for this. I'm going to give you, delegate the responsibilities to do that. You're perfectly capable. You don't need to come to me with all those sort of things. I'm delegating that responsibility for you. And you know what? Most people actually really appreciate that, because what you're showing is you're showing trust in them, aren't you?
Yeah.
Showing that you know how to do it, and you don't need to ask me. You know all that you need to know, and I want you to take responsibility. And so that actually gives them a boost.
They feel motivated by your trust, right? Which is nice. So you're making me think of a visual that I often use, is that ladder of delegation, isn't there? From sort of, I don't know if you've seen it on the internet, where like there's a person with a giant head that's got it all. So this is me before, and you're like, you've got a tiny head not doing it. And then my head gets smaller as I give more and more delegation, and your head gets bigger, you know? So it's,
all right.
I wonder if I can do it with my hands. I'm not sure if I can. But it says how much responsibility goes on to ultimately, instead of me doing it all, you do it all. But it's not about abdication, which is, okay, I'm fed up, you do it all. And there's no graduation in that. Mm-hmm. There's like steps, isn't there, into getting you in that area on that thing, because you might be totally responsible for the finance, but not for something else, the marketing. So in each area, helping you to move along that. The other thing you said before we started recording in our little chat, you were talking about being really clear on an outcome. And I like that. I wonder if you could just talk a few minutes about that, because I thought that was interesting.
So what I'm seeing a lot is that a lot of the teams I work with, the individuals they want freedom. People say, I want freedom at work. So when we talk about freedom, they want to be able to make their own decisions. And so if you're managing someone like that, that can be quite challenging. So the thing that you've got to be good at, and it comes back to delegating as well, again, is to be talking really explicit about the outcome and not about how they get to that outcome. And so again, what you're doing is you're telling them that they've got the skills to get there. I'm just saying that this is what we need to achieve. It's obviously useful always to give a time frame, and so this is what we need to achieve by this time, and leave as much as possible to how they get there to them. Because they're the experts there. And it goes back to Richard Branson. What does he say? He employs people with skills that he doesn't have, and he empowers them, doesn't he? To say, right, you know how to get there better than I do, but that's where we need to be, and that's where that's when we need to get there. So I think a lot of people, when they're managing and leading individuals, they think that they need to give them a step-by-step process, which actually for a lot of people drives them mad. They don't want that. They just want to say, well, okay, what is it you want me to achieve? And lead them to it. And then, of course, that allows people to be creative and innovative and all those sort of things, that, and use their expertise that, I believe a lot of people come to work and only use a fraction of their ability.
Absolutely, yeah. So be really clear on what you want to see. You said have a time frame in there and some measurable outcomes.
Definitely, yeah. Absolutely. OKRs, objectives and key results are important, and measuring them so we know when we've got there. And also not forgetting, when do we know where something isn't working right, and how can we make sure that we don't carry on down that path and when it's till it's too late. So measurables are absolutely the important thing, and how to measure them, and so that everyone's getting the feedback they need. You know, and that's another key skill, isn't it, when you're leaving a team, is to, you can never give, I believe, too much feedback, as long as it comes from the right place. But feedback is a skill, again, how to deliver it, but making sure that it's, you know, predominantly positive, because most people hold back, and the only time they seem to give feedback is when it's negative. And so people start to get the impression that you only notice when they're doing something wrong.
Mm. And there was some research that said something about, I'm not sure these numbers are exactly right. You might know a bit better than me, but it was something around, you know, for every 10 pieces of positive feedback, then you can give a negative, and that is the right balance. Was this maybe in a parenting article or something like this? Or,
yeah.
But it was
at least five to one. But the more you do, the better. When you come to a point where you have to, you know, rein somebody in from something and basically give them some, what we say, negative, but actually what it is just putting them right in something that they're not quite doing right. The more positive reinforcement you've given them initially, then it makes it easier, and also it lands better.
Mm. Because you're not criticizing all of the person, just that thing.
Well, Sylvia, pages is the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, you've written a book around motivation, haven't you?
Yeah.
In your book, there's 9 chapters, I think you said?
Yeah, that's right.
And which chapters are popping into mind that are really relevant about the conversation that we've had today?
So I've come up with a concept which is predominantly around people that are running businesses, but it's equally around, you can, you know, change the context slightly with regards to running a business in regards to yourself as an individual. And the number one thing that I start with, and the concept I come up with, is getting the measure of your business. And it could be just as much getting the measure of your role as a manager, or whatever you concept or a position you are at work. The first thing to do is put the mirror up, is to understand yourself, understand what you come to work for, understand your behavior styles, understand character strengths and all those things. Because I think if you know yourself well, that gives you a good place to start with regards to what it is that you then, the next step is to evaluate where you are and where you want to be. And so as the business owner, you'd say, well, this is where we are. And you'll talk about, you know, employees and turnover and all that sort of stuff, but on an individual basis, well, where am I in my career and where do I want to get to? So you evaluate here, where do I want to get to? And then you start taking action, and that action can be around, you know, training yourself up, or just giving you clear goals and recognize those goals. And then the next step is to systemize things. So that's just as relevant on an individual basis as it is with a business. Businesses have to run on systems and processes. But if you are an individual who leaves things to chance, then, you know, think about how you can systemize things so you don't leave things to chance. So one of the things that I'm quite passionate about more and more is the importance of looking after yourself. And so the only way that you can really look after yourself is to make them a priority. So if you want to be fit, you've got to put in your diary as a default, I go to the gym, or I go for a walk, or whatever it is that you make sure they're in your diary first, and make sure they're things that you have to do. Because if
you're right, aren't they? Yeah.
So if you don't prioritize them, and you do them when you feel like it, then as we know, most people don't get around to it. And so, you know, a week goes by, I think, oh, I haven't done any exercise, and you wonder why, you know, you're not feeling great and all those sort of things. So looking after yourself is key.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot with leaders, and sometimes they go up the ladder and indirectly their health has gone down. So maybe if I haven't seen them for a couple of years, I can visibly notice that, yes, their career is apparently going well, but their personal health has not gone so well. So I absolutely resonate with that. So just one, as we kind of come towards the end, I've got a question around, let's say we're a reluctant leader. Should I say, chuck it all in and go and open a yoga retreat in Cornwall?
Well, you might want to do that. That might be the right thing to do. I mean, who am I to say? But I mean, I've heard some quite dramatic stories around people that have taken action around change in their career because they knew that what they're doing was never going to fulfill them. And, you know, when we talk about motivation, it's identifying them is helpful. Once you've identified, then you can make better decisions. Mm-hmm. And so that's the key, isn't it? It's the decision goes back to the evaluating stage. You know, understand yourself and evaluate where you are and where you want to be.
Yeah.
And make sure the things you're doing you've done your homework and you know why you're doing something. You know, if you're subtly throwing things in and you don't know why, and doing, you know, throwing things up in the air and hoping they come back down in the order that you want it to be, that's probably not the right thing to do. But you're doing something that has clarity around it, has purpose, you know why you're doing it, then that will drive you forward and you'll do the next step and the next step and the next step.
And do you think it needs to be a really big change, or do you think some people can stay in the role they're in and make a few tweaks and make all the difference?
Subtle changes can make a massive difference. If I could just share one story that I share quite a lot, actually. So I was working with a conveyancing lawyer years ago. And it's one of my early coaching clients. And we identified the things that she wanted from our work. One of the most important things was that she wanted to make a difference. And so what we also found out was that she wasn't feeling she made a difference at all. Very, very low satisfaction with regards to that. So I said to her, so do you get any feedback with regards to the difference you make? She said, oh yeah, I'll get feedback from every client. And I said, well, do you read it? And he said, to be honest, I don't. I said, well, I'm going to ask you to go and read all but just tap into your feedback you got from your clients and see what difference you make, because I'm sure you do. I can't believe that, you know, what you do is completely meaningless. Anyway, next session, lo and behold, oh yes, I do know exactly why I do what I do. I know that I do make a difference because I'm easy to deal with. I'm very, I quickly respond, blah, blah, blah. I'm very knowledgeable, et cetera, et cetera. But what she realized was that she was in a slightly wrong environment. She was working in quite a large organization. And so she decided from what we discussed was that she wanted to do the same work, but she wanted to change the environment, and that was work in a smaller business. So that's what she sought, and that's what she did. She went to work for a smaller solicitor firm doing exactly the same work, smaller team, where she felt that she would make a difference and she felt that she was part of the team as opposed to rather than a small cog in a great big machine. And she actually moved house to do that. So that's the important thing. So there were small changes, but then there was a big change with the move. So sometimes just changing the environment can make a massive difference.
Yeah, I remember you've reminded me of a client that I worked with once, and she had the same thing about not knowing if she was making a difference or not. And the one thing that really is probably very relevant for people listening is that the boss kept on moving her performance appraisals. Well, they weren't performance appraisals, but like one-to-ones. Mm-hmm. And there was meant to be monthly one-to-ones, and she hadn't had one for 9 months, which we all know is totally possible because stuff comes up and there's that individual isn't causing any problems, so you move it and you deal with the ones that are causing problems. But then it comes to 9 months and she hasn't actually had a one-to-one, you know, proper conversation, and the manager didn't think there's, or her boss didn't think there's anything wrong with that because she was sort of getting on well. But it was really clear when we talked about it, how important that was, because she needed that to know she was making a difference and she was doing a good job. And so one difference of reinstating those one-to-ones and making sure that they didn't get moved or cancelled made a huge jump in her motivation. So it doesn't have to be massive, does it? It can be these smaller things too.
Well, the important thing there in that story is that that's the only place that person was ever going to get know that whether they're making a difference or not. There's no other way, I guess. So if you keep putting that off and off, the thing that they really want is actually missing. So it can make a massive difference.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't think the leader would have ever had any notion that was such an issue. And of course, she's being very polite and didn't want to sort of make a fuss about having a one-to-one. But after having read how important it was, she realized that was the key to it. But yeah, we don't know these things unless we dig deep. So I think moving on to actions then, obviously what we're saying is have your first step was about self-awareness. We've got a podcast all about self-awareness, emotional intelligence, doing the personality profiling, looking at your motivational maps. There's lots of things we can do to improve our self-awareness. Are there some other easy first steps if people want to take that journey into seeing if they're a reluctant leader and how not to be?
Well, think about this. I think if you want to progress your career, there's a choice you need to make. And it's either you're going to go down the responsibility route. So you take more responsibility because that's what businesses pay for, responsibility. What's the other thing they tend to pay for? And that's expertise. So I think the first thing to do is think about what is the right path for you. And then rather than waiting to find out what you need that to be good at what you do, make sure that you started to learn around, especially if you're going down the responsibility route, mm-hmm. start to think about what skills you need, because it will be different to what you're doing. If you're not currently managing people and you suddenly have to, then there will be different skills that you need to develop. And think about that, and think about also about the things that you'd have to give up to be that person as well, and how you're going to sort of carry on in some different way using those things. And it's being very adaptive, I suppose, what we're saying here, to the environment you're moving into, and doing things that still motivate you but in a different way.
And we keep that energy high, even though we've changed job roles.
Exactly. Yeah. Being key to knowing what the things you really come to work for.
Mm. And what if they've been, because, you know, reluctant leader isn't just a new thing, right? I've spoken to some people who've been leaders for 20 or 30 years and they're realizing that they've always been a reluctant leader. So it's not necessarily just a new thing. What about that? I've been in business 20 years. I realized that possibly I didn't actually ask for this. I just kept getting promoted because I was good at what I did. So I moved up and up and up. Mm. What do you think I should do? Is it too late for somebody who's been in that situation, or is there a little suggestion you could make for them?
Well, now I'm going to come back to something that you said before we went live, and that's about opportunity. I think when you're in that position of leading, it gives you the opportunity to do things. And that's the thing, focus on those opportunities and not maybe the downsides. It's about seeing the things you can do that you wouldn't be able to do if you weren't in that leadership position. So, and that's a mindset thing. It's about, you know, focusing on the upside rather than the downside and all those sort of things that, to be honest, I wasn't very good at the time, going back to my retail career. But, you know, looking back, I could have looked at things in a completely different way. We did great work with local charities and all those sort of things. I didn't pay much attention to that. And, you know, sometimes you need to think about the whole picture and not just about the day-to-day.
So be a bit creative in, if you are in a privileged leadership position to be able to make some changes yourself, you can think about what you like, what brings you energy, and how you structure the team or the tasks to maintain your energy and allow other people to grow as well.
Absolutely. And one of the things I look back in my retail career was we took a lot of sort of 15, 16-year-olds, and then they stayed with us for 2 or 3 years and went off to university or whatever. And I had great pleasure in, when they moved on, seeing how they developed as a person. So one of the things you can sort of, you might get something from with regards to being in that position is how you can develop somebody and allow them to be the person they want to be, you know, and play a part in that role. And I think, again, we don't dwell on that as enough as a key role we have when we're leading a team, is the influence we have on those people, on their life and their journey to get to the place that they want to get to.
Yeah, they say people leave jobs because of bad managers or stay in jobs because of good managers or leaders, don't they? And we all remember all of our bosses, I'm sure, throughout the years, be they good or not so good. So
I always say that we're always inspired at every person that we come across. We're either inspired to be like them or inspired to not be like them. So
That sounds an excellent place to leave it. Thank you very much. So if people want to know more about how they can hear about Reluctant Leader, you've got your podcast that we've mentioned, you've got your book, and just remind us of your website, please.
That's the reluctantleader.academy.
Brilliant.
Stuff on there, talk a lot about motivation, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah.
Lovely. Thank you very much for joining us on the Debrief Show.
Thank you for the invite. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Debrief Show. I hope it sparked something useful for you. If you enjoyed it, please follow us or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and share it with someone who really needs to hear it too. You can watch our episodes on YouTube and LinkedIn, or you can listen on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you like to get your podcasts. Tune in again next time.